Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz to Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm her mom, Christy.
And we will be having beverages and talking about our favorite TV shows and movies.
We started this podcast to talk about Bridgerton, because it is a show that we absolutely adored when it first came out, and then when season two came around, we just felt the need to talk about it.
And not necessarily all in a bad way, it's just we have a lot of opinions.
And so we are sharing them quite loudly, we're going episode by episode, but as part of our podcast, we are also sharing some beverage recommendations to go along with the various episodes that we're watching.
Mm-hmm. What's the beverage that you chose for this episode, Mom?
So for this episode, which is called The Duke and I, mm-hmm. I chose a cocktail called The Sparkling Duchess. And it's really super tasty. It's one of my favorites. It's got a lot of sparkling and not a whole lot of alcohol or not a lot of alcohol content. It has elderflower liqueur, Prosecco, and ginger ale. Mm-hmm. And so it bubbles a whole lot, which makes me happy.
It's sparkly.
It's sparkly. What are you having?
Well, as if you have been on this podcast before, listened to this podcast before. It's not like you're here. Hi. But I
She has imaginary friends.
Wow. Thanks, Mom.
Love you.
Not true. Anyway, well, in a way, you're our imaginary friends. But either way, that's kind of sad. So I offer the modification, or the YA, also known as yoga alternative. I would probably just cite the first episode if you don't know what the yoga alternative is. But I offer the non-alcoholic option. And for this one is another tea. I swear there are more non-alcoholic things that you can drink that isn't tea, but they just work, and I like tea. So for this one, I got one called Chamomile Nights, because some stuff happens during the night.
And finally.
Yeah, that's kind of just like what I based everything off of. It's more of an herbal tea, which maybe doesn't work entirely for that episode, but the name works enough. So that's what I came up with.
We're going with that.
So we're talking about Bridgerton season 1, episode 5, The Duke and I.
Yeah, is there a summary of this one?
Of course there is. On Netflix, which we all know and love for their very short and very broad summaries, The Duke and I. To fend off rumors about their garden escapade, Simon and Daphne must make a personal appeal to the Queen. Marina's wedlock scheme dismays Penelope. I feel like that covers a lot of it.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Okay, well, we're going to get into it, but there's some really good things in this episode, too. And I don't think that gives you a whole lot of...
I mean, it can't, though, can it?
No, I guess not. So
you go to Wikipedia for that stuff. Oh, a couple of disclaimers before we begin.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, this is not a spoiler-free podcast. We will be spoiling basically just Bridgerton season 1. We're going to try to keep it contained to season 1. And not just within that episode. There probably will be future spoilers. Sorry about that. If you haven't watched it, we recommend you do before you listen to the podcast. We will try to not spoil season 2 until we get to it. And then also another warning is that we do curse. Well, yeah. I curse more, but that's surprising.
Oddly enough, I'm a bad parent.
That's not... anyway.
Okay, so...
we're just going to skip right over that. But yeah, those are the warnings. And soon enough, we're going to be talking about really explicit content.
Yes.
And
because this
stuff
show
that makes
has...
people uncomfortable.
Right. So this show does have some explicit content, and actually the next episode is
where the warnings really come into play.
Right, exactly. But they're also, I will, because I read the books, I'm likely to spoiler some things that are from the books, and Natalie has some specialized knowledge too.
I did a lot of acting in community theater, and so I'm going to be focusing more on the acting performances and pointing some of them out that really stuck out to me personally. So that's that. And now let's just get into season 1, episode 5, The Duke and I.
So this episode starts in kind of a frenzy. Like, they're trying to hide the fact that they all were out at this duel, at dawn, right?
Yeah, Daphne's rushing back to her bed so that it looks like she's been in bed all night.
And part of what I love about this, like, Rose, her maid, comes in and is like, hello. And she's like, oh, like, Rose doesn't know that she's been out of the house. I mean, come on. I come on.
I mean, I can believe that Rose didn't know, but at the same time, I kind of want Rose to...
I think Rose is just buying in. Like, I'm going along with this, Rose,
is going with, yeah, I think Rose is just going along with it. I think she can tell, but she's not going to say anything about it because she's great.
Right.
And we love Rose.
Oh, we do. And so Daphne then has to go tell her mother...
about her engagement. And Violet is very hungover.
It is very funny. And I love, like, these cures that they offer. Oh, raw eggs and garlic. It's like, that sounds so vile. I can't even imagine.
That would probably cause people to be way more, like, ugh, no.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. But she lies about, Daphne lies a little bit about the how she got engaged.
Well, first, I'd like to mention that Daphne's just like, I'm engaged. She doesn't specify to who. And Violet's just like, oh, great. Like,
you're going to be a princess.
Like, good for you, darling. I love you, but okay. And then she's like, no, to the Duke. And she's like, what?
And suddenly,
and she's like,
Violet's all better.
She's like, oh my goodness, this is great. Wait, what happened here? And Daphne's just like, I feel like she's about to say what's going on.
But she just can't tell her mother.
Also her mother is just like, no, I don't really want to know what, like, caused the whole, like, thing, because she has an idea of, like, something must have happened between the two of them, probably something intimate that kind of forced this along.
Well, part of the reason she gets that idea is Daphne's like, hey, I kind of want a special license,
yes.
The special license thing, for those of you who don't know, in order to get married, even back in those days, you had to get a license.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, it's to make sure, like, you're not related to people. You know, like, you have to get checked for stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, even, you had to get a license, and it took time.
Yeah.
So it was
more specifically from the church you have to get the license.
Right. So the license, all because the queen is, like, well, or the king is the head of both the church and
right,
the state.
Right.
It kind of
goes
all in
hand.
Right.
So you just need to get a license, and that's what causes Violet to be like, oh.
Yeah, the special license, they're like, we need to have this faster.
It's, like, quick.
Yeah.
And also, I love throughout the scene, like, Violet is, like, just frantically fanning herself, and it's so great.
Yeah. Well, and she says, she's like, sometimes you have trouble controlling your passion.
Like, you know? Violet's just like, oh yeah, with me and your father, it was kind of hard. And
yeah,
Violet,
we're
Daphne's
not
just like, no, don't want to hear about that. It's just, we want a special license, we don't need to go into detail. And Violet agrees that she doesn't really want to go into detail with Daphne about, like, what Daphne and the Duke did. So,
yeah.
Rose and, no, not Rose, Violet's lady's maid comes in with the cure for drunkenness, I guess.
Garlic and eggs.
And Violet's just like, all right, we need to have the wedding ready for 3 days. And the maid's face just drops.
Like,
her week has just
OMG.
Been ruined.
Right. I mean, and you see later in the episode, like, this is a major production.
It's 3 days.
It's
a wedding.
It's like,
first of all, it's a wedding. Weddings are a lot of work. And
yeah, but this is a wedding that is going to...
Upper class wedding.
Well, and they're inviting everybody.
Yeah,
like,
they invite everybody.
To the reception part, which is at the house. Which is the part that the maid is in charge of.
Yes.
Poor Rose
has to do so much.
Well, Rose doesn't know what she's supposed to do.
Violet's maid, we get there. Anyway, then we go to a Lady Whistledown voiceover, unless you have something else to say.
No, go ahead.
Lady Whistledown has a voiceover, and she talks about, oh yeah, there's an engagement now but everyone else thought it was going to be the prince. Oh no, it's going to be the Duke of Hastings. And I'm just over here like, how the hell did you find out about the engagement?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Still the same day, I believe, unless there's been a time skip I don't know
about.
Well,
right. I mean, the decision's made at dawn out on some field
that
somewhere.
Nobody knows about. Violet is the only one, and Violet and the people present for the duel are the only ones who know about this engagement in the first place.
Well,
so unless
the servants,
they squealed,
right.
I don't know.
Well, the servants at the Bridgerton house, when they find out of it, I'm sure they're telling people.
Absolutely. But, like, it's just like they...
That,
but the thing is, the timing of the voiceover happens, and then you see Daphne just getting ready for her day and putting on a dress with Rose. And I'm just like, how the hell has this happened
she
already?
She found out. She wrote the article, and she got it published.
The same morning, because it all happened in one morning.
Exactly.
And, like, it's been, a couple hours. And dawn is, like, it could be about 5, 6. And
yeah.
So it's, like, how did you do this? And it's probably before lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of, like, how the hell, the efficiency of it all is quite impressive.
Well, right. So, and it is so efficient that reading Lady Whistledown, or delivering Lady Whistledown, to the queen at the palace.
And then the queen reads it. She's shocked. She looks over. The prince comes into the room. And
but he's
just
so happy. And he's like, I've had a good night last night.
And he's like, what? And the look on his face, he's like a lost puppy. I feel so bad for him.
You love him so much.
Oh, I do. I do.
You love him so much.
He's such a
sweetheart. But he's so shocked by it. I do love, and you mentioned this, that they were, like, getting Daphne ready for her day.
And Rose is following her around, trying to, like, get her, like, into the dress while Daphne's pacing around, trying to figure out what goes into putting a wedding on.
Well, right, but Rose is just like, we're gonna handle this, yeah. It's gonna be awesome, I'm so happy for you. I mean, she's such a great support.
Like, she's a great support system, but also Rose needs a support system because this is a lot to take on.
Oh, it certainly is. And you know, again, there's a lot of, like, montage-y kinds of things. Like, Cressida and her mom, like, are reading Lady Whistledown.
And they're, like, smirking because they're evil.
One thing I had to notice about this, and this is one of those great casting things, and we haven't really talked about the casting other than, like, we've got some great actors.
We got amazing people.
We do, but Cressida and her mom look so
similar.
Much alike.
It's insane.
Like, yeah, it is insane. And it's like, wow.
Like, you see the Bridgertons, and yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, they can be related. But Cressida and her mom, yeah, that's definitely her daughter.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's
it's
insane.
Like, yeah, it's
I love
crazy.
It when casting does that. It's so impressive.
Yeah.
And they're both so devious, and they are so good. Like, that casting choice, Cressida and her mom, both the Kappas, are so good.
The Cowbers.
Whatever.
All right, so the prince.
Oh, no, before the prince, Daphne is going downstairs, and, like, Hyacinth is asking all these questions.
How I love Hyacinth.
Because we love Hyacinth, and she's asking all the right questions. And then it's like, oh, you're going to be a duchess. Ooh. And then Eloise is just like, well, great. Now you're going to get married, and now the focus is going to be on me. I really, like, now you're trapped or whatever. And she has this whole attitude about it, and Daphne's basically like, be grateful that I'm doing this so that you guys can have great matches in the future, because otherwise you'd be screwed.
Well, right, and that's, like, literally true at this point.
Exactly.
Because, you know, if she doesn't marry the Duke, she's ruined.
Mm-hmm.
And that is gonna ruin all of them. I mean,
and obviously there's more to it like that, but, like, obviously Eloise doesn't
right?
know about that, but I mean, there are so many layers of, like, you need to be grateful that I'm doing this for everybody in this family, and you need to be happy for me. Just be happy for me.
Just
you'll figure
shut
out
up.
Like, figure out your own problems on your own. I'm worrying about this, and it's going to help our family.
Yeah.
So then we go over to the prince who
shows up at their house, I guess.
No, before that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have pretty in-depth notes for most
the
of
prince.
The scenes.
Okay,
I have a pretty good, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the prince is talking to the queen and about, like, oh, well, I guess she found somebody. I mean, she was in love with him, so I guess that's that. Oh, well, I'm going off to Prussia now. And the queen's just like, oh, you're going to fight for her. And it's just like, I don't really want to fight for her. If she's into this guy,
if
let
she's
her
not,
be
if she,
into this guy.
Right, and that was, and he notices, too.
Yeah,
that, like,
he knows.
This was a pre-existing kind of thing.
Absolutely,
so.
He understood. And I love it. And it's so
I also love, it is very sweet, but I also love that he does not go back to Cressida.
Yes,
she was just a diversion.
He's literally going back to Prussia. So it's like he was going to stay for Daphne, but he's not staying anywhere for Cressida.
That's right.
But yeah, so that happens. And then he goes over to talk to Daphne and
there we
be
go.
Like, hey, was I misinterpreting the signals? Like, I'm sorry if I was.
And I love the way he does that speech because it's like, you know, he again, it's the nice guy.
He's
thing.
Such a sweetheart.
He is a sweetheart. And
he's a gentleman.
Know, even if he doesn't believe that he was misreading, he gives her the out. Like, you know, like, look, hey, I probably messed this up, whatever.
Yeah, it was probably my fault. I'm really sorry if I was pushing things that you didn't want. Like, I was doing all these hints about the future, and obviously it was not something you wanted, clearly. And I'm really sorry if I was pushing you too far. And she's just like, oh, no, you weren't misinterpreting
right,
anything.
Right, which again, Aunt Daphne, to her credit, tells the truth. Like, look, this is on me.
Exactly. And it's just like, yeah, no, you weren't misinterpreting anything. And then he's just like, wait, are you being forced into this marriage? Like, he's all concerned. I'm like, oh, you sweet boy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then she's just like, oh no, I'm forcing him. And he's just like, he has this look on his face like, okay.
And she's like, no, it's love, really. It's a love.
It's a really love. And but I didn't realize and whatever.
It was a lovely breakup speech, though. I mean, it was beautiful. Really well
done. And they end on good terms and it's very sweet. And
right at the end, I don't know, did you have something else about that actual interchange between the two of them?
Not the actual interchange, but I know we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I want to talk about Hyacinth because Hyacinth jumps
going
in.
All Bennett.
Well, no, she's like, she kind of stands up for romance in this. She's like,
oh, absolutely.
I seriously hope that, you know, Duke's proposal was as romantic.
Or half as romantic.
Half
as that.
Romantic as that. Because, you know, obviously so the prince was such a good guy, mm-hmm. and he takes this so well and it's beautiful, and I'm like, Hyacinth's my girl.
No, yeah, we love Hyacinth, and she is very bright. Like, it's so great. And yeah. I agree. I wish the proposal was that romantic, but no.
well, it wasn't even really a proposal. I mean, it's more or less Daphne,
she was like, yeah, we're
doing
married.
This thing.
We're getting married. Sorry about it, you're getting married.
Suck it up, dude.
Congrats, you're married to me.
I'm pretty awesome.
Yeah, and then, I do love that that Hyacinth says that, and then Daphne's just like, well, whatever.
Right, I mean, she has that look again. Again, it's an acting thing. It's like, yeah, it's all facial.
Yes, it's so great. And then we go to Promenade.
And Lady Danbury is pissed, and she is
because
to be.
Simon is late for Promenade.
And not only is Simon late when he shows up,
he's
still like drunk.
He's disheveled.
He's hungover.
He's quite disheveled, and there are bags under his eyes, and he's
it's
late.
Like he's been drinking all night.
He has clearly been drinking.
Like, all night.
Yes.
And she is mad.
She's like, did you bring the bar with you? And I'm like, girl, I love you. I love Lady Danbury.
Yeah, I mean, and she's like the only person who can really rein him in, too.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, because Daphne can in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as like a...
Different tactics. Right. She can be Violet can be... Not Violet, sorry. Lady Danbury can be so forceful with him that it's just like, yeah, you're not going to mess with that.
Right,
Lady
right. And then they promenade. And this, to me, is like... It's
so awkward.
It's so awkward, and it's so much worse for Daphne because she's feeling terrible anyway, right?
She feels so bad.
And she's trying to make conversation with Simon,
and he's just not.
And he's not even trying. Like, you know, she finally, because he's not responding. She's
like, look at me. Yeah. And then
he starts to soften.
Yeah, you see the look in his eyes just soften. He's like, kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah,
this is something I'm going to be okay with.
Yeah, he kind of thinks, you can see the thoughts running through his head, and you see them just kind of stare at each other for a moment, and then this rude couple shows up
out of
nowhere.
Right, and I do want to like interject a book thing here, because, you know, what all of that... Like, he looks at her and he realizes, you know, hey, this is what I want anyway. Mm-hmm. This is okay. All of that's, like, written out. Yeah, it's all written down. But there's no... I think it's so well done, the way they are acting it. Mm-hmm. The facial things, all of that.
The clear chemistry between the two actors is so powerful, and it really carries a lot of the show.
It really does. So, the rude couple comes
up. The rude couple comes up and is just like... Oh, you're going to make such beautiful babies.
Well, of course, the whole baby thing.
Something in that vein.
Just like...
And then everything's ruined. And Daphne's just like, well, thank you. And she like tries to hold his hand, and he just...
very obviously.
Just very quickly, like, gets out of her grip. And
gets away from her. Like, she can't touch him now.
Makes space. And, like, the couple just kind of looks at them like, oh... Okay.
Something's not right here. Okay.
Way to make it obvious, Simon. Jesus Christ. What the heck is wrong
with
you?
I mean, and poor Daphne's kind of like, what do I do now?
She just kind of is like, oh, God, people are going to talk about this now. Like, you couldn't have just waited for, like, 2 seconds to let go of Simon. You could have just
you couldn't have faked for, like, 5 seconds.
Seriously.
I mean, come on, you know, like, you need to, well, but and he just, for whatever reason, isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
Because the word children is, like, taboo to him.
Yeah,
so,
it's his kryptonite, I suppose.
Yeah. So,
then you go
there's
to
a,
Antony.
Yeah, there's a very brief thing. Antony goes to look for Sienna. Sienna's left town.
Yeah, the Modiste answers the door and it's just like, nah, she's gone. And
actually, I think a lie, but, you know, whatever.
I think it's a lie, too, but it doesn't matter because Antony still wants to provide for her and whatever. So she's left. right. in the middle of the morning, she left after sex and just kind of left town, I guess.
I don't know. This is why we don't believe her. Right, exactly. It's like, again, there's a very short time span in which these things get turned around, and it just does not seem plausible.
Yeah. So then we go to the Featheringtons, and the Featheringtons are having money troubles, yes. which is our favorite thing in our period dramas, is money troubles.
Or daddy issues. daddy issues, it's a thing.
So the Featheringtons are going to have to cut back on
there's a
dressing.
Daddy issue involved in this, too. So
yeah. So we go to them, and Lady Featherington's like, we have a problem with, like, our bill at the Modiste. Like, you can't pay it right now. And there's, like, a lot of bills that still haven't been paid, and we are in debt to the Modiste. And so it's just like, well, we're just going to have to reuse some dresses. And Lady Featherington is horrified.
And right, she's just like, fine, then you just won't have tobacco. And he's kind of like, what? I have to give something up?
Yeah, he's just like, well, fine, I'm making the biggest sacrifice ever, and you're going to have to get rid of this.
But in this interchange, too, they have this whole discussion about money. Colin shows up. And Penelope is really, you know, she's really trying at this point to get his attention and make him realize you are being manipulated.
Yeah,
you have goals, you have a life, you know, all
she literally
stuff.
Is just like, well, oh yeah, speaking of traveling, which was not mentioned at all, hey, Colin, you're going to Greece. And then he's just like, well, I don't know if that's still the plan, and I feel like there are too many things I'd miss here, which, such a good line, love that, if I actually cared about their romance, and if it wasn't
which,
romance
course,
at all.
There wasn't, but
and,
it's all one side, because Colin's so nice.
And then it's just like, but you still want to go to Greece, though, don't you? And it's just like, she's trying so hard, and
right.
it's so sad.
Right, and Colin is so focused on Marina, and
yeah. Marina doesn't like tomatoes.
Tomatoes.
Whatever. It's just like, oh yeah, oh, instead of flowers, I always bring flowers, and you always have this, like, great, like, reaction to it. Maybe I'll have to bring something different, like tomatoes. And then Penelope's over here like, she doesn't like tomatoes. And it's just like, she's trying so hard.
You know, they have great tomatoes in Greece.
Yeah, that's exactly how it brings up. You know where great tomatoes are found? Greece.
You can go get her some there.
Yeah, go to Greece. Don't leave Marina. Leave Marina and go to Greece.
Right, and again, it
comes from a good place for Penelope, especially the whole Greece thing. I feel that, especially when she brings up Greece, because first of all, that's leaving her behind too,
right.
And so it's not like she's just being like, oh, stay, like, leave her for me. It's more, leave her just follow the dream that you've had for a while and you've already planned.
Well, right, and I care about you, and I know you're going to be back, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I will have another shot at this if you don't marry Marina, but if you marry Marina...
There's nothing left.
There's nothing. There's no hope,
yeah.
and she's got to have... Yeah,
some
something.
Hope.
Yeah, right. And
gives Penelope some hope.
Right, he's the only guy that is
kind
even
to
remotely
her.
Well, but even remotely on her radar too.
Right.
So, you know,
she's a bit narrow-minded in that regard, but still,
yeah.
I can understand why. I mean, it's Colin, but like, I mean, still, it's just they've had such a good relationship over the years that like she's only thought about him in that way.
Right.
Which is kind of, it's so sad to watch. It really is.
It is. So then we cut to, like, Rose being told all the things she doesn't know about
and also
running a household.
Well, also, the thing is, like, she has to make these decisions for Daphne, in a way, because, like, they're asking about, oh, which one do you want on the menu? It's like,
what
well,
flowers?
I... Yeah, it's just like, well, I don't know what Daphne wants. I'll have to ask her. And then it's just like, no, you need to know. And I'm like, I'm not in her mind.
Well, right. So she hasn't had that responsibility. And again, it's one of those coming-of-age things. It's like... Antony having to learn how to be, like, the social viscount, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
like the guy who actually makes matches for his
yeah.
sister.
And Rose is going to become a Duchess's lady's maid, which
right.
is a big step up for her.
Right. So there is a whole lot of work involved. And again, there's that Downton Abbey feel. Like, you
yes.
get that sense of, oh, wow, you know, this is a big step for everybody in
yeah.
the household.
And this is a big step for Rose because she has to manage it all.
Right. And she's like, I'm going to get this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be
so
good at it.
She's so determined, and I'm proud of her. Good
right.
for Rose.
Right.
Love Rose.
Rose is awesome. So then
Daphne
has to go to the Modiste because she needs
a
her
wedding
dress. And she needs, according to her mother... Five
like
night,
new night dresses. And it's just like, why do I need five new night dresses? And it's like, it's not for you.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, this is not about you. But Cressida's there.
Oh, God.
Icky old Cressida. And here's, and I maybe I blanked on this because I wanted to blank on it. But I had forgotten that Cressida at the Modiste, I remember there was an exchange between her and Daphne.
I know what you're going to say. I did not realize that she was explicitly like, I know you went into that garden.
I know you went into that garden to trap Simon.
Yeah.
Not just
no,
you
not
went
just
into
in
the
general.
Garden. Right. You went to trap Cressida.
Cressida's real smart. Yeah, I love how devious Cressida is. Right. I love to hate her. Because
she would have done it if it had been her option.
Absolutely.
And she would totally do that with the prince if she got the chance.
Yes. And I love how observant she was. And it wasn't just I'm glad it wasn't just a tactic by Daphne, because I feel like Daphne knew that Cressida was looking for something like this. Because she was just like, okay, well, Cressida saw us. It wasn't just a passing thing where, Cressida saw, you were in the garden. No, she knows that Cressida knew why she was in the garden.
Right.
That's the issue. And it's not just she went to the duel and it's just she will ruin me because she knew I was in the garden. She knows why I was in the garden and she will tell people why.
She knows what we did.
Almost exactly what happened in that garden. And she will expose me in that way as well. And right. I love that those are added stakes for it, because I'm glad it's not just, she's always going to the garden, so I think she assumes she knows what's going on there.
Right, there was initially an assumption on Daphne's part, but then Daphne turns it on her, and you
great.
Go, girl.
Do you want to be a Duchess's friend or enemy? It's your choice.
it's all on you, and if you want to be my enemy, bring it.
Yeah, really.
More
please,
or less.
Bring it.
Yeah.
Once I'm married, you're going down if you were not going to be on my side.
Right.
If you try to do anything like this again, it's not happening.
Well, and Cressida's response is, let's see if you can get him to the altar.
Oh,
I mean,
that
this
bitch.
Is like catty, mean girl, ugly shit. For
I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes. And then, speaking of catty, mean girl, ugly shit, we cut to
the queen.
And again, we've got Beethoven's Fifth going.
Yeah, it's
which,
a great music choice.
Right, it's a great music choice. I mean, it's a little trite, but I love Beethoven, so it's like,
didn't
okay.
She mentioned either Bach, Beethoven,
Mozart,
or Mozart. It's
Mozart. Yes.
Dang. If it was Beethoven, that would have been even funnier.
Yeah, that would have, but it would not be accurate.
No,
whatever. But, so the queen is really...
Oh, sorry, this is where the prince says she's going back to Prussia.
Right,
I mixed that up.
So the prince is like, hey, I'm leaving. And the queen's like, come on, fight this out. Make
You're
it
a prince.
Yeah, exactly.
You have epaulettes. We know you can do this.
Right, his reaction's like, this isn't about title.
Yeah, I'm not going to pull title. I'm not going to pull rank. It's not going to happen. If they're truly in love, it won't matter.
And that exchange...
And I'm not going to lower myself down to that level.
Amen. Amen,
bro. Go, prince.
Go,
prince. This is why I love the prince.
Exactly. But that whole interlude gets cut short by a page coming in and saying, oh, the king wants to see you, the queen.
And the queen's like, is he dead?
He's lucid.
And then she's oh.
Yeah, which of course and it explains it later, but there is so much subtext to all of that, and I think
most of it is subtext,
right? But I think part of what's cool is that they don't explicitly hit you over the head with absolutely everything.
I'm
on
glad
the show,
they
which
don't.
Is kinda nice,
but at the same time, it's with such little time that it gives to the queen and king's relationship that it's kind of maybe give me a little bit more.
Yeah.
If you were going to do this, if you were really going to go there,
they're doing a spin-off show.
Are they?
All about the queen and her backstory, they are.
Oh, well,
they
there
are.
You go.
So, and I think that that's partly why is people were kind of hey, I want to hear more
about what the heck is going on here? Because they do give you bits and pieces, and the actors are fantastic,
they are.
It's kind of why not? But at the same time, I'm glad they're doing a spin-off, and rather than just expanding it within the Bridgerton story, because the Bridgerton story isn't about the queen.
No,
she wasn't even
about
a character in the books.
Yeah,
she,
right.
So,
and, but again, I think they have to try to be at least a little more historical as far as the verbiage that's used and that kind of stuff, because there are casting choices that have been made. I have no issue with
either.
Right,
first of all, gorgeous.
Yeah,
my
exactly.
goodness. And
great
I love
actors,
amazing actors. Also, I love the wigs that she's been given.
Gotcha.
It's so fun to watch the different wigs, and it's just so great.
Right, but I really hope that spinoff has a little
more.
A little grounding in the historical stuff, a little more.
And I feel like that's probably
because
what they're
going
to go
for. Because she is an actual historical character, as
Absolutely.
Opposed to the Bridgertons, who are this
completely
fantasy.
Fictional.
Right.
And so I did not realize that they were going to do a spinoff.
There.
That's interesting.
There.
Anyway,
is.
We'll get more into the king and queen a little bit later on in this episode. We go over to a little fun exchange between Simon and Antony waiting for the archbishop, I believe.
Yes. And I love their relationship.
It's so funny. It's two bros.
But I think part of what's great is we haven't seen a lot of that. We've seen a lot of conflict between the two of them.
You don't get to see them just talking, especially
being
after
friends.
After such a big blowout between the two of them, they're just kind of well, whatever. And he and Auntie's like, well, we probably need to settle the whole thing with the dowry. And Simon's like, I'm not making you pay for this. I'm marrying Daphne. That's a stupid tradition, and I'm not going
to
accept payment.
Right. Exactly. I'm not going to buy her.
I love that he does that.
Yeah,
it's
I do
great.
Too.
It's nice. It's not. I would say subtle. It's not subtle, but I do like that he's just like, I'm not doing that.
Well, right, and you know too, and again, this is more of a book thing, but in that day and age, there were a lot of gold diggers that would be like, much like Burr Book, I've got to marry Daphne because I need the money, kind of thing, and. You know, I've got title, but I don't have the money to back it up.
Yeah. And I love that Simon also is like, if you want to put it in a trust for her, that's fine. She can use the money. We could use the money, whatever. But I don't want to just all of that to go to me. It's not. I'm not doing that.
But then there's this great thing where Auntie is like, well, I should probably apologize for shooting at you.
Well, no, it's better because Auntie is like, I want to apologize. And then Simon's like, for shooting at me? And then Auntie's like, indeed.
And Simon's like, well, if you weren't such a bad shot. Like,
I wasn't really that worried. You're such a bad shot. I would have been fine.
I mean, but it's like such a guy thing.
It's so cute.
It is so cute.
I think the boys' interactions in this show are so good.
Yeah.
They're so funny.
And they're well written, too.
They are well written. And I feel
But the books have that, too, which is nice.
And I think the thing is, it's like, it's interesting to see how differently they are written, because I feel like they have such a relaxed feel to them for the most part. Obviously, there are a lot of tense moments, but I do love how, like, just they just, like, work well so well off of each other as well the actors do, so it's kind of great.
Yeah.
Anyway, the special license is denied.
And they're all
and we wonder who's the cause.
Yeah, they're all like, oh shit.
Who could possibly have a vendetta against Daphne for refusing the prince?
Yeah, gee.
I wonder.
So they
and
all
Lady
have
Danbury's
this...
like, I know who did this.
Exactly. It's the queen, right?
Absolutely.
So, right. And so they have this, like, they cut to the Bridgerton house. They're going to have, like, a dinner, like a celebratory dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And Lady Danbury's like, all right, you're going to have to appeal to her.
And you're going to have to tell them that it is love. And you're going to have to be as sincere as possible. Don't lay it on too thick and don't make it insincere. Just please just tell her the truth. If
right.
there is truth,
right.
tell her the truth.
Right. And then she's kind of like, you can say that, right?
Yeah, you can say that, right? You can still do that. And they kind of look at each other like, sure.
Yes. Simon and Daphne are kind of like,
huh? Okay.
But they don't talk. And this does come up later, but it's like, you really do understand that there's just
they haven't talked anything out since she was like, no, yeah, immediately, like right after, like, oh yeah, we're gonna get married. They talked at the promenade, and then basically they didn't talk.
Well, they didn't even talk at the promenade. Daphne talked at the promenade,
and that's the thing. You can see how tense it is because and they don't know. Daphne doesn't know how he's feeling about it. And she's concerned because she feels like she's trapped him. And he's concerned because he thinks he's trapped her. And it's just, it's a whole thing.
Right.
And
right.
So
there's a whole lot of misunderstood, like, hey, if you would just talk it out, it'd be fine.
Yes.
And we've had this discussion about romantic comedies before. Like, it's like, just talk to her.
Honestly,
or just talk to him.
The
you
whole
know?
Thing with communication in romantic comedies is hysterical to me. Because they just need to text. Or just get on a fucking phone call. Like, Jesus Christ. Talk
the girl.
Out.
I was in Romeo and Juliet twice.
Just because I was in it doesn't mean I don't communicate with other people. I'm not that like that. That's the worst offender of all, though, to be fair.
Yes,
but,
exactly.
Like,
that's my point.
But also, that could just be, like tracked down to, like, bad postal service. Like, I mean, he tried, but he didn't
but,
succeed.
But, you know, then death.
Whatever. Either way, see, that's the worst case scenario. If you don't have good communication, you could just die. Anyway, they are not having good communication right now. And so then we flash forward. Unless you have anything else to say about that.
No, go.
Then we flash over to Benedict's boring-ass storyline.
With the orgy.
The orgy. I believe you said last
episode. I did. It
you
was
said
not
last
the
episode.
Orgy.
Yeah, no. No, she...
Last time was not an orgy. It was just, like, an art thing.
That was not what I was going to say, but
I'm
that
sorry.
Is also true. Last episode, I think you said that he met the modiste then. He
right,
did
I was
not.
Wrong. I was
he met the modiste in this episode,
right.
And they have sex, I assume.
Well, so, along with what turns out to be...
Charles Blake's wife. No, but this is after...
Well, yeah.
Okay, so let's just talk through the orgy scene. So Benedict... Well, not the entire thing. Benedict goes in, he's just like, ooh, orgies. And then he looks over, he sees the Modisti, he's charming her. He is pretty charming. I love Benedict.
He's a good-looking guy!
He's a good-looking guy. He seems like such a sweetheart.
He's a Bridgerton.
Yeah, and also, I love the actor. The actor, I love him. All of his facial expressions are just on point, and I love him. But, so...
the Modisti's like, hey,
oh, Bridgerton, you're a Bridgerton, aren't you? And so
then he's like, I don't think we met.
And they talk for a little bit, and he's like charming her, and he's like, let's go somewhere more private or whatever. He opens the door and he sees Charles Blake having sex with a man, and he's just like,
oh, really his lover, right? You know?
Yeah. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he closes the door and he's like, all right. And then he walks over, he sits down with the Modiste and then this
woman
to his left or whatever, and they start having a bit of a threesome. And so, well, one can assume it was a threesome anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even put this, but a counter for sex.
Oh, gosh, you need to add
No, but this also throws off my entire counter for the rest of it, but fine.
This is
an extra sex counter. You can do whatever you want with it.
Where are we on the sex counter now?
This is why I'm... five.
Five, okay.
This ruins everything.
Well, five is like one for every episode. That's, like, good.
It's not that consistent, but fine.
Whatever.
Anyway.
No, it's not. In the counter does, like, change.
Yes, it does. I have to readjust all the counters. Anyway.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
So then they go cut to
Simon
and
he is
Will.
Drunk as hell.
This scene, the way it is set up, just looks exactly like Pirates of the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
where like there's one of the pirates who is drunk
in a pig pen,
who's like singing
and
drinking.
Guy has to sober him up, and it's just like a whole thing.
Yeah, and so Simon is like wasted.
He's been kicked out of the bar. He's singing. He's a good voice.
He does. He's singing about love. And Will,
like the best friend he is, has to pick up Simon while he's drunk.
And he's like, no more drinking for you.
And he's like,
oh, my feelings are what got me into this. Feelings are irrelevant.
And I'm like, bitch, please.
Like, sing some more about love.
About like the woman who was cheated out of this. And it's just like, let's not. And so Will takes him home. So then we go over to Marina.
Lady Featherington has decided once again to push Lord Rutledge, the icky Lord Rutledge, on Marina.
Because Penelope mentioned, it's like, hey, do you think it's wise that Colin's young. Colin is probably not going to propose to her
soon
enough.
He's got time, right.
He's got so much time on his hands. He has this whole trip, whatever. Penelope made an appeal to her mother, hey, let's maybe just not encourage the match between Marina and Colin. So Lady Featherington goes to Marina and is just like, hey, we're going to try to, if you can't get Lord Rutledge, if you can't get Colin to propose by Saturday, then we are going to have you engaged to Lord Rutledge.
And Marina, this is where, like, she completely turns into
this is where I start
bitch.
Really, really hating Marina. I understand her, like, tactics before, like, she didn't want to marry an old guy, I get it, but then she gets feisty and
right, and
so
what she says basically is, I'm gonna have sex with Colin by Saturday, more or less.
Okay.
She's like, I'm gonna seduce
him. She's gonna seduce him, she's going to get engaged to him, she's gonna at the very least get engaged to him by Saturday,
and she's going to
seduce him enough to have sex before the marriage happens. Not necessarily by Saturday, but she's going to have sex with him before the marriage even happens so that the timeline works out for the baby.
Right. So he won't know whether it's his or not, basically.
Yes.
And she's also basically saying, I am going to get him in a compromising position where he has to marry me.
Yes. And she also is just like, hey, but he's also a Bridgerton, so that will be very helpful for your family right now.
And Penelope is standing outside the door, and she hears this whole
thing. And she is horrified.
Right, and she's just like, I've got to do something. I mean, you see her, like, first of all, falling apart, but second, just, like, I cannot, you know, I'm trying to do this in a nice way, but I'm going to have to get
I still
ugly.
Care about Wilson. Marina and her, what she wants, I understand it, but she's not going to let her ruin Colin, because that's just wrong.
Right, and she loves Colin.
But it's also just wrong.
Right.
There are many layers of morality to this.
Yeah, there are. And so then we cut to the
queen
and
the
king at dinner.
It's the first interaction we've ever seen. Well, not ever seen.
With the king.
He comes in at one point. I think he says hello or something like that before this. But
whatever. So they are at the he's at the dinner table, and she comes in, and he's like, "Oh hey, come sit by me." Mm-hmm. And he sounds fine for a minute.
And they talk, and it's nice, and they're reliving old memories, and it's so sweet. And you can tell they had a really good relationship.
And she misses him.
She really does miss him, and you can see it in her eyes. It's right. Very sad. And she's just, like, so unsure of when he's going to break, but she kind of wants to relish in the moment because she doesn't get many like this. And it's so sad to watch. And then he brings up a dead...
Their daughter.
His dead daughter who had an illness several years back. And died, and so she brings it up, and he starts he's like, accusing
bring
her.
To me. Well, he says, "Bring her to me."
Yeah, and it's like, "What has this woman done to my daughter?" And it becomes very ugly. He starts having a fit, and right. She has to leave the room. And the ending shot is her leaving the room, and it's
right,
so
and
sad.
You know that she's just dying inside. I mean, she just is because apparently this is the way they interact,
and it's really really sad, and it also. The thing is also, like, you don't see them interact that much, and that's probably for a reason, because they don't interact that much. They show what they can at this, but I act like it's a reality TV show. It's not, but I feel like there's a reason why we don't see as much of the king and queen in general, because they just don't really have that many interactions. That
right, because he's not lucid very often.
Right.
He probably, you know, has to be kind of confined.
Yeah, and he's like taken back by servants, and she's just like looks so heartbreaking as she so heartbroken as she leaves the room, and it's really really sad. However, it doesn't really do much for the plot, so it's kind of
well, it does. You know, there's a juxtaposition later.
It works kind of for the episode, and I understand why it was put in. But I was talking to my dad about it. Like we paused it or something at this part, and my dad was just like, "If I had to get rid of one storyline from this entire series, it would probably be the king and queen, just because it doesn't do much for the plot." And I agree with that, but also, like, when it has stuff for the emotional, like, reasons and the motivations of certain characters later on in the episode and the series as a whole, it makes sense why they would show some of this.
Right.
So it kind of fits, but it is a little bit dull because I'm so invested in what's going on with, like, Daphne and Simon. And
right.
That's
and
the
there's
same with
so,
the Featherington
so, right.
and
so
the Bendix storyline and right. stuff like that. I'm so focused on the love story that it's kind of annoying when we have to go to so many subplots. But
right.
that's just
right.
me.
And there are, again, the subplots are really very few in the actual books.
Yes.
So then Daphne is like tormenting
can't
herself.
Sleep.
She can't sleep because she's, you know, like kind of freaking out.
She goes out into the garden. She's pacing around, and then
Rose comes out,
and she's trying to comfort her because Rose is the best.
Well, right. And Daphne decides that she's going to confide in Rose about, hey, the Duke can't have children.
And Rose is just like, well, I have an aunt who also is in this situation where her and her husband cannot bear children, but they have a very happy life, and they're very, just, and that has not changed how they feel about each other, and that has not changed how wonderful their marriage has been. And she's just like, it's a love match, isn't it? And it's just kind of like, yeah, and it's like,
yeah, and Daphne's thinking that hers isn't, in part because, you know,
they haven't talked!
They haven't talked, and... You know, they
and
talked,
based off of all of their behavior leading up to the proposal...
Well, and she doesn't know what love is. We've talked about that before.
Right.
Like, he doesn't know what love is for one reason. She doesn't know what romantic love is. And so it...
Or what lust is. Either.
Or any of that. Yeah, right. Because, you know, like, really? These are your
exactly.
options? I mean, how would she know? So, you know, that's a lot of what's going on with her. And so it is so sweet that Rose is you know, trying to... You know, comfort her with that, but it's a little scary for her,
yeah.
And so she's really afraid that, like, you know, Simon's gonna be miserable. They're gonna be miserable.
Yeah, and she's gonna be the cause, and she feels so guilty about it.
Right, and so
she doesn't blame Simon for not being able to bear children. That's not why she's upset.
She assumes it's physical.
Yeah, well, that, but also it's like...
And she doesn't know what the physical parts are anyway.
That too, but either way, she's so scared that, like, she's the one failing in all of the regards and not Simon, and she's
right.
putting all this blame on herself, and it's really, really sad to see because she just feels so guilty.
Right.
In a way, she kind of did this, but, like in a way, right. she, like, was like, yeah, we're getting married, but at the same time, it's like, she feels guilty about a lot more than just that, so...
Right. So then they cut to Simon waking up from his drunken stupor at Will's house.
On, like, a changing table or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, it's a small bed, and Will's son wakes him up. And again, that whole family is just adorable.
Will and his wife and his family are the best.
Right. And so Simon's like, hey, I want you guys to be at the wedding. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be there.
We're going to be at the wedding. What are you
there
talking about?
There was doubt. My goodness.
Yeah, this was not an option for you. But then Will's wife, and I cannot remember her name.
I don't remember her name either. I feel bad.
But she starts pushing Simon to like invest because Will's going to be doing these like kind of
tournament kind of things
that like
more upper level kind of stuff.
And he needs the money so that maybe he can retire from the ring and, you know, like
provide for their family
and not get killed.
Yeah, she's concerned about that. And so, and he also, and Simon, this is one of the fewer times he gets to see a really happy family. Mm-hmm. And I love that it's his best friend's family because he knows his best friend really well and his life and stuff like that. So he gets to see such a natural, like, loving, like, couple and all these sweet little kids. And just, like, they're just having a great life.
Well, and it informs some of what he says later, but, mm-hmm. you know, Will basically is like, look, I just have basically accepted that, you know, even if she's not right, she's right, kind of thing. Like,
exactly. It's like, just trust her.
Yeah.
If you love each other, just trust. And trust is so key. And right. that's communication and trust. There you go.
Surprise. So finally, they go to see the queen. And Lady Danbury has set this up, and she's like, and it's obvious in the interchange between Lady Danbury and the queen that the only reason that they're there is Lady Danbury got them there.
Yeah, because Lady Danbury is the best and she has connections.
Right, and she goes way back with the queen. The queen's like, you can only, you know, curtsy
bow
that
low.
Oh,
and she's
on.
Just like, with these knees, yes. It's yeah. just like, yeah, that sounds about right.
So,
Daphne's appeal does not really, like, do anything for the queen. She's just, what? It's kind of half-hearted. She's not really, like, pushing too hard.
Well, it's a little trite.
It's reserved. It's not saying anything that's new.
Right, and I think part of the problem, and you're right, it's reserved, but she's so nervous. They've not talked about what they're going to say to the queen, which is mm-hmm. dumb. Mm-hmm. So she's just kind of, like, stammering out something, like, yeah, we love each other, is that and this thing with the prince, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean for, he's such a sweet person, but I'm in love with him. And it's like,
yeah, sorry.
And the queen's facial expressions during the scene are great. She's literally just like, okay. Whatever. You're really not doing anything.
And then Simon interrupts her.
And then she... Does Daphne say it was love at first sight? Yeah,
yes,
I believe Daphne does. She's just like,
sight.
Well, it was love at first sight. And then Simon's like, no, it wasn't. And I'm yeah, just like, thank like, you, Simon.
Well, right. And then he goes into this very
beautiful
speech about how they had to develop a friendship.
Yeah, they developed friendship and... Then
the breaking up with the prince is his fault. He takes
yeah,
it.
He takes full responsibility for that.
He's like, you know, I realized that this is my best friend, and I wanted. It's almost like that when
with them.
Right, this when Harry Met Sally kind of speech.
Yeah,
it's just like it's so sweet.
So if you if you know anything about me, Harry Met Sally is my favorite rom-com.
Oh god, it's so great.
Because it has this kind of relationship and like built upon friendship, which is so sweet. And I love that. And so Simon is just talking about all this, like, he mentions this one part in, like, specifically, he says, conversation is easy, and it clearly isn't easy for him because of his background, and also he just does not, he's a Mr. Darcy type, he doesn't really talk to people that, well, he's a smooth talker, but conversation, normal, real conversation is really easy with Daphne, and, yeah, it's so
sweet.
Well,
and he says he was shocked, he was jealous, and it took the prince being there for him to realize,
yes.
like, I want her to be my wife.
And you can tell that he is telling the truth.
Yeah.
So sincere. The Regé-Jean Page does a fantastic job delivering the speech. It's so good. You can tell all the emotions are there. Daphne's watching in awe.
Like, right, I mean, her jaw kind of hits the floor. Like,
it really does.
Oh, wow, we've never talked
like,
about this.
Yeah, it's like, wait, you actually, what, huh? Where is this coming from? You didn't talk about any of this. And then the queen is like, I like that you brought up friendship because that is the greatest foundation for
a marriage
and a relationship. Because even if that crumbles, there will always be feelings there.
Right.
And it is, obviously it applies to her and the king, and
right.
also, again, with that emotional, like, motivation of, like, this is reminds me of me and my husband before everything went sour
yeah.
with the whole mental stuff, and so it's really nice to see her being like, yeah, I recognize this love, and coming from Simon, he's like, do you want to marry her? And then it goes over to them getting married in the chapel.
So clearly, you know, Daphne has said yes.
Obviously.
Although I would have liked, I'm not sure, I like and I understand why they edited it the way they did, but it's like some part of me wanted to see her say yes.
I do. I kind of wish I saw that too. I also agree. I understand why they edited it, and it's just like, well, yeah, no, obviously she said yes. And it's just like, well, I kind of wanted to see her say yes.
Well, and partly because I just love watching the two of them together. So it's
Also just thought that she was doing such a great performance of like, and I wanted to hear how she would say yes.
Right. But maybe they had trouble writing that. Well, so.
It's just yes. But like, either way, I feel like it's one of those things where I really like, it's not only the proposal that needs to be beautiful, it needs to be the reaction to the proposal that also really does matter.
But again, it's the queen proposing and not
I know that.
It's like, dude!
Well, I mean, you didn't really have much of a choice in the first part of it, but either way.
Or the second part, apparently.
Yeah, no, not either.
So they cut to the wedding, and my first note is in all caps, where the fuck is Francesca?
In Bath, mother. She couldn't just get there.
Bath is like a 30-minute drive. She had days to get there. If they had been planning this wedding for Saturday, and she had at least 3 or 4 days, they could have gotten Francesca there.
But
it's a wedding.
But here's the thing. Maybe they just didn't tell Francesca there was a wedding.
Maybe she's in a box.
To be fair, I don't think that she, like, I don't feel like it would, I feel like it would be hard to, like, correspond during this time because all these things are so uncertain with, like, the special license being
Lady
not...
Whistledown gets her shit out same
day. Well, maybe it doesn't go to Bath. I don't know.
Well, but even, like, notes and stuff, like, the note from Eloise to Penelope, like, right across the square or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's in Bath, though.
Right, but, you know, they have a much more effective postal thing.
If it arrives with a platter, it's from the queen. So maybe they ran short on platters. I don't know. Either way, Francesca's not there. The counter doesn't go up for lines because she doesn't have one. I believe I missed one in the first episode, so that's maybe 5 that she has right now.
I doubt it.
Don't know.
But anyway,
I think I did.
So they start out at the wedding, and you see Simon. Of course, he's gorgeous. And then you see
it's a very small
Daphne.
Barely anybody's there. It's just the family and Will and his family.
Right. And the reception later has a whole bunch of people. But
yes.
The actual wedding is this intimate family. Intimate.
The wedding dress I love.
Oh, it's beautiful. And
her
hair. Tiara and the
veil.
Oh, my
beautiful.
Gosh. And I gotta say this, I'm very into clothes and style and whatever, which is annoying to Natalie to know. But they choose for Daphne a lot of flowers as motifs for her, and there are flowers in this tiara that are kind of diamond flowers, and it so suits her overall appearance. I think she carries it off beautifully, and not everybody could. So it's really kind of like I'm just so impressed that
it's
such a good job.
Phoebe Dynevor is just gorgeous. They're really doing her all the favors. Like, I mean, she just, it's amazing.
Right. And so.
Go costuming team. Like, we'll just have to, I feel like that's just a constant thing for me. The costuming people just did a fantastic job.
They did.
These.
And this dress has this beautiful train. You get to see it a little bit more later. It's it's beautiful. And again, flowers throughout. It's just, it's really, really beautifully done.
And then they start the service. They're kind of nervous. You can tell both of them kind of look like they're about to throw up.
Daphne looks like she can't even make eye contact with
her. She feels it looks like she's about to cry.
Yeah,
and she's
the whole
just
time.
And so then they get to the part with the rings. And there's a very slow-mo taking off the glove moment.
Like her fantasy.
Yes. And there's a lot of gloves. The gloves come off and the emotions come out.
And there's skin-to-skin contact, which is fairly rare.
And they put on the rings. The rings are beautiful. And then I don't have anything left for the ceremony.
The one thing that I had is that, you know, once... he puts the ring on her finger, Simon's breathless. I mean, we've seen Daphne breathless with him a little bit.
But you get to see him breathless.
You get to see him kind of breathless.
And I love that.
It is so lovely.
Yes.
And then they go to the reception, which is at Bridgerton House.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to say,
the wedding cake
is
gorgeous.
I mean, there's this elaborate
how they did that in 3 days is
scene
crazy.
And fondant on like the multi-tiered thing.
All these figurines and
well,
stuff.
Well, right, and there's like gazebos and things. I mean, and you, I almost would like to see it closer up because I get the sense that much like the title sequence, the long title sequence with the tree, mm-hmm. there are like things about their story worked into the frosting, and you can't really see it.
Because it's on the screen for such a short amount of time. Right. But it's clear that so much work has been put into that. Yeah, so great job, props.
Yeah, gosh, they are just
props
awesome.
And set dressers, great job. You guys you guys knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, for sure.
Then Penelope, you see Penelope trying to set Marina up with anybody else.
Right, trying to get Marina away from Colin.
Some younger people, though, also.
Right,
but she's like, hey, this guy looks like an eligible bachelor.
He has nice eyes.
He seems like he could be nice. He has, he seems to have a good demeanor. And then Marina's just like, but I have Colin. It's like, but you don't, I don't know. Please
right,
don't.
And she pleads for Colin.
Yeah.
Really.
She does, she's like, please don't trap Colin. He's a sweet person. Please don't do this to him. And,
right.
And she's
see,
just
Colin
like,
is, and part of what pisses me off is Colin's so oblivious to how much.
Oh, we're
going to
get there.
Him.
And I have a note that I'm going to do verbatim for that part.
But then to heighten the tension in that relationship, Lady Featherington comes up. And again, you know, this I have to reiterate that this subplot does not exist in the books. So, Lord Rutledge is engaged to someone else. And
Marina's
got
like,
to
so
get
happy. Marina's so happy that...
And so, yeah, she is. But they cut over to Colin, he's got that stupid, super puffy Elvis pompadour. And I'm like, dude.
I mean, it works for me. But either way, so she's just like, all right, it's like, now I gotta work my magic. And you can see, and then, so like, she walks off to go to Colin, and then you see Penelope and Eloise being awkward because they still haven't settled their dispute.
Well, and Penelope, like, physically runs into Eloise.
Yes.
And it's like, ooh.
And they're like, sorry. And it's just like, they don't know what to do because... they don't understand how fighting with a friend works because they.
Much like the talking. There's
it really
a lot
just
of talking
looks. Problems. It looks like they have never fought like this before. Which I mean, obviously, it's a new sensation for them because you can tell, and they just don't know what to say to each other.
Right, but I think some of it has to do with you know how their interests in you know like their future paths are diverging as they've gotten a little bit older, and so I, you know that's part of what they don't know how to talk about, and in part because they don't. You know, Eloise doesn't want to acknowledge that Penelope's changing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really very interesting. But then...
And for someone who's all for change, she's really close-minded about those
other people's changes. Other people's changes.
I'm always changing. Why aren't you? It's like, maybe I am. It's like, fuck you.
Exactly. Your change is wrong. But then Marina... And I hate this... sequence between
it's
Marina and
my,
Colin
I'm,
so
I
much because
so
I
much.
Hate Marina.
I hate Marina in this moment.
Well, and yeah, I, again, at some point I'm going to talk about the whole Marina character and where she comes in later on in the books, but right now...
Poor Colin's so awkward because he doesn't know what to do.
He is.
He's such a sweet little boy.
He is such a sweet little boy, and he's so honorable.
Marina's so honorable. He's such a sweetheart, and she's trying to put the moves on him. She's about to kiss him, and he's just like, oh, no, I don't think, as tempting as that is, I'm a gentleman, I'm not going to do that to you, I don't, and he's just such a sweetheart, like, he also is, unwittingly not being trapped in that scenario, and then she's just like, oh, well, and like, okay, fine, and then she starts to leave, and he's like, marry me, and I'm like, fuck.
Because, of course, Natalie wants to marry him.
Well, no, but also, like, this is so stupid, and then Colin proposes, I wrote this, Colin proposes, oh, you naive, sweet, idiotic boy, you are so stupid.
Yes.
You don't know her.
Yes, and Marina's like, yes, yes, yes.
She got what she wanted. It's like, oh my gosh, yes. And I'm just like, I hate you.
And then Colin's like, well, we should have a long engagement, and let's not tell anybody because
it's
Daphne's
day. And then
she's
just like, and she's like, well, that's a rather long engagement. It's like, or romantic. And I'm like, yes, if you were a normal couple, yes, it would be romantic, wouldn't it? No, but
if you actually loved him,
if you actually cared about him, and you didn't, it didn't matter if you guys were married right away. It wouldn't matter. And then he's just like, oh, I'm so excited, and he's just so happy, and I'm just like, boy, I love you, but no.
So then they cut back to the main reception, the main hall, and the queen is there, and that's actually a huge honor that the queen would show up at your private house.
Yeah, seriously,
hello,
it's insane.
For a wedding reception. It's like, okay,
that's
wow,
crazy. Probably Lady Danbury got
him
there.
Yeah, Lady Danbury's all over it. Queen acts like she knows about you know certain things involving like the Duke and Daphne, and
she thinks she knows more than meets the eye.
Right. Right. And she also starts talking, there's also a discussion about Lady Whistledancer.
Yeah. Basically, Eloise is like, I'm talking to Lady Danbury, and she's like, she's accused her of
being
Lady
Whistledancer. Yeah, she accuses Jacques.
To be fair, when I first watched the show and before I found out who Lady Whistledown was, I was so determined that it was Lady Danbury because I wanted it to be so bad. It would have been so great, but it would have been so obvious. But at the same time,
right.
I love it.
Right, and Lady Danbury is busy not writing about manipulating society. She just lives it.
She's just a part of it. Right? She's just in the center of it and she's like, fine, I've got this. And also, I feel like she would have way more stuff to dish out than that.
Oh, yeah.
She wouldn't have the surface level stuff. No, she has even the deep stuff that nobody sees. Like, she already has secrets going way back. Like, she knows all about it.
Yeah.
Especially about Simon. I feel like if she was Lady Whistledown, she would have exposed more than she... Like,
well, and I'm grateful that she doesn't. She keeps his confidence beautifully.
She's his guardian, basically. Right. And she's not going to expose him to that much ridicule.
Right. So, and so the queen starts talking to Eloise about, how's your investigation into Lady Whistledown going? Who have you figured out? What have you figured out?
And Eloise is taken aback, like, oh, I guess we're going to be an investigative squad.
Yeah, I'm on the squad. And that actually is a great... function for Eloise for the remainder of the season, I think.
And I feel like it's understandable why the queen wants to know who Lady Whistledown is, because Lady Whistledown is going openly against what the queen says, and the queen is pissed. So it's kind of like, all right, fine, I'm going to figure out who you are, and I'm going to destroy you.
Exactly.
And Eloise is just like trying to figure it out for some reason,
right,
to prove she's smart. But at the same time, once she starts making connections and maybe thinking about who the possibilities are, she thinks about how close they could possibly be to her, and she starts having a like crisis of conscience, like, do I want to expose them? Like, not even in the, like, specifically in the first season as well, just kind of trying to figure out who it is, and it's the whole thing.
Right. So there is also an interchange between Benedict and Charles Blake here
where,
at the reception.
Where Charles Blake introduces his wife, which is the person he had a threesome with.
Right, and Benedict's like, oh,
takes a
so
of
nice
wine.
To meet you. I'm going to drink because I'm a Bridgerton.
And again, when I'm stressed, I just take a swig of wine. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I also love, again, the Benedict's actor does so many great facial expressions just in the background. And I appreciate them so much.
He does. And he actually, and again, that sibling thing. And you've actually talked about this before. And I think it's important to point out, it is hard to be an extra at one of these
things.
Oh,
yeah. As a consistent ensemble member, I'd like to say it's a lot of work. And so it's not just you have to be a part of the scene and you're trying. There are many aspects, and this, I guess, is going to be my segment for theatrical stuff. This is why I pay attention to the background so often in, like, shows and movies and stuff like that, because I know what it's like to be in the background of stuff, but at the same time having to come up with, like, all right, so how am I reacting to this? Who am I? Like, I don't know. Sometimes I give my character and like, my friends and I who are in the ensemble kind of give ourselves our own storylines just are going on in the background. Like, in one show, I was in the middle of, like, a love triangle, and I was just, like, stealing someone's man, and it was
right,
great.
That had nothing to do with
anything. Nothing to do with
page.
Anything.
Right.
Nothing to do with anything, but in the middle of, like, songs where we didn't really give that much direction as far as, like, what we're doing, like, we just kind of went with it, and it's great.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to do.
It's fun
and
to watch, too.
Yes.
Because sometimes there's some scene stealing going.
A little bit if you go far enough, and it's great because it proves that even without lines, you can make such a difference. And also, I love to make people laugh with my facial expressions whenever.
You do that,
and
for sure.
There are many moments, like there was one moment where I didn't have a line and I just had to bring out like a microphone or something like that. And I was wearing a really like tight skirt and I could barely move. And so I just kind of took the moment and was just like, hey, can you bring this out? Blah, blah, blah. And I walk out very slowly. trying to get into this, like through like all of this. And I put it down and I'm just like, whatever. And
the giant eye roll.
And I just walked back and it got a laugh. And it like, I just love those moments because you can do so much with them, and if you're given really free rein with it, it's great. And I love seeing those moments, especially from the people who aren't really given that much, like Benedict. Even though he's given some, I always look at like him and Colin and Anthony, and they're all
Philippa,
like everybody. Prudence. You see all of these characters who don't really get too much time, especially not as much time as, like, everybody else, and you get to see them having so much fun, and especially with the, with just all the Bridgertons, whenever they're in all in a scene together, I love looking at the little interactions that go on, and there's going to be a moment next episode that I'm going to talk about where that's really prevalent, and it's, I just love to see Benedict's facial expressions the entire time, because he's so entertaining. He really just has a very expressive face, and I love that.
He does. So, then there is a little interchange between Daphne and Antony.
Yes.
And Antony, again, is like, oh, you're going to get to have the big family you always wanted.
And then she's just like, oh.
and Daphne kind of loses it. She's like,
I need to go get some air.
Well, and it's not even air. She runs upstairs. And
Simon notices.
Yeah, and Simon notices that she's running upstairs. But part of what I love about this, she runs up the stairs and the train on her gown against the blue carpet on the stairwell. It's like, oh, this is such a gorgeous dress.
It really is.
I got distracted by it. Oh, the gorgeousness.
Yes. And then Violet comes into her bedroom while Daphne's kind of freaking out a little bit. And then she's just like, they talk. Well, I don't say they talk. They kind of dance around what happens on
this
the wedding
birds
night.
Birds and bees talk. Violet's birds and bees talk is pathetic. I'm sorry. And this is the one of those areas. It's like, there
Violet,
are a couple
I
of
love
things,
you so much, but
I
you
do
need
too.
To do better
there are
about
two
this.
Things, two major things that you need to do better about. One is talk to your children about sex. Two is, where the fuck is Francesca?
Keep track of your children, too.
Exactly.
Francesca's younger than Eloise. Like, where is she?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is she in Bath?
Why is she in Bath?
That's a good question.
Well, and you know, it's kind of like sending, what is it?
Lydia.
Sending Lydia to the city.
Brighton.
The Forresters. Yeah,
is it Brighton?
Yeah, Brighton.
It's
with
Brighton.
The Forresters. It's like,
and it's just like, why?
Mistake.
Yeah,
mistake.
Why are you sending your youngest child there? It's not, at least it's not like Hyacinth or something.
But yeah,
like,
but I mean,
Francesca's
like,
just going there for no reason.
Yeah. That's
I guess
like,
she is Lydia, but she's less annoying because she doesn't talk, so.
How would we know?
We don't know. Anyway, Violet is trying to give some tips and she's not giving any.
Right, and so.
And she's like, well, maybe you guys got, you. Maybe you were familiar with some of it because of what happened with you and the Duke already. Because she already knows
and,
that
and,
something
and
must happen.
And Daphne's like, I know nothing.
I know nothing.
You need to tell me stuff.
I love that. And Daphne's like, I really don't know anything. Mom,
right.
Please tell me what's going
right.
on.
And what's terrible is Violet's like, okay, let me try to, like, you know. Like it's kind of
you
like,
know that it's
there
like
were
it's,
dogs
it's like
and there were puppies
yeah
and no one had to tell them
yeah you can figure it out for yourself but it's just like first of all that's if you don't give the talk and if you don't specify certain things with your children they are going to be inexperienced they're going to have to rely on the partner to do most of like the stuff that happens and it could be dangerous
well right because you know.
And if something's uncomfortable and they aren't aware that it's not meant to be uncomfortable, then they're not going to know what to do.
Right. And so one of the things, too, is that Daphne is like, look, so this marital act that you're not describing to me, that's for children? You know,
do you have to do that to have children? Or
or do you only do that to have children? Because if we can't have children, then maybe we can't do this marital act? I mean, she doesn't understand. And she also doesn't understand what is going on with Simon, really. And has not asked him because she doesn't know what to ask, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
they're not talking.
Right. So on top of like all the other
and, okay,
800,000
so then things. Antony comes in and interrupts, and I wrote down, no questions were answered, so Daphne will just have to wing it.
Right. It's like, we got carriages, let's go.
Yeah, so they lead her outside. The goodbye to the family is adorable.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, and we're going to come to your house, and we're going to...
Yvonne's like, if she invites us, and I don't think she's going to, and then Benny's like, she's going to enjoy the peace and quiet. It's just like, it's so cute.
It is. It's adorable.
Another family dynamic moment that I love.
And one of the other things, too, is the Daphne and Eloise. And Eloise had said something actually really nasty to her in, I think it was the last episode, about, like, I'm just really glad I'm not you.
Yeah.
You know, like, so there's a lot of tension between them. But Daphne turns to her and she's like, I've given you something. I've given you a wedding present.
Yeah, for you.
Yeah,
I'm giving you a present. And then it's just like, if you want to go into my room, it's with four walls and a bed, and you get, and she's, and like, she basically gives her room.
Right.
And Eloise is just kind of like, well, the lighting is pretty good in there. I guess I could read in there. And I'm just like, she gave her a personal safe haven. If she wants alone time, she can go to her room.
Well, no, she can move into her room.
That's true.
Right. So, but I mean, like, and it's...
We don't know what, like, Eloise's setup in her room is either. If she wants a bigger room, I guess that's available to her now.
I think she was sharing with Francesca. I'm sorry.
Well, she's not sharing either. either anyway, so it doesn't matter. Francesca's never there. So she has a room all to herself anyway, but a bigger bed works.
Right. So, you know, Simon's like patiently waiting. He's like, because he doesn't, again, he has no family to say bye to or go to. So he just waits and they get in the carriage.
He's also feeling bad because he can't give her that and she knows, and he sees how happy she is.
Right, and he is very patient about that, but then they get in the carriage and you realize they haven't even talked about the honeymoon plan.
She doesn't
at all.
Know what's going on. And then she doesn't even know the travel plan. Right, she doesn't know what's going on.
And she's like, oh, we should get to the inn by nightfall.
And she's like, the inn?
What freaking inn? What are you talking about?
I mean, it takes more than like an afternoon to get to
Cliveden.
So we're going to have to stop in an inn. And it's like, we're having our wedding night in an inn. And it's like, yeah.
She's kind of like, okay. That was not part of the plan. What are you talking about?
Great, thanks, I guess. And then
I think in her head is like, we're going to have this beautiful with rose petals.
I'm going to figure out what's happening.
It's going to be planned out.
I'm
going to
be in the room where it happens.
It's going to be private. Right, in the room where it happens.
And
exactly.
Then Simon got two separate rooms at the inn.
Oh my God. Right? Who does this?
Okay, first of all, you just got married. So either way, like, even if she doesn't think that Daphne understands how things are done, it requires two people.
She's got
that part now. So having separate rooms does not help you.
Right, so she is livid, and she's pacing. And
he's
pacing because he realizes, I've done something
stupid.
And
he's just like, I'll see you at dinner. And then he's in their separate room, just like, what's happening? And then Daphne's like, all right, fine. And she gathers up her courage, is like, I'm going to go talk to him. And she opens the door, and he's already at the door because he wants to
talk,
but he also is just like,
dinner's ready.
Yeah, he like thinks for a second. It's just like, you can tell he wanted to talk to her, but then he was just like, dinner?
Let's eat. Because he's so at a loss for words when he's actually looking at her and speaking to her. And, yes. And you know, he can talk to the queen about her. Mm-hmm. He can talk to other
Lady
people.
Mary.
But
well,
he,
either way, he doesn't,
he
doesn't
really.
He
but,
could.
But where there's actual emotion involved, he really
when he's looking her in the eye, he can't do it.
Yeah, he really struggles.
He can't direct that towards her.
Right, but he's kind of a man of action, like the garden thing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there is a man of action.
I noticed that Simon stutters when he's talking about how they feel about the marriage, and it's a nice addition to
and he's like, he assumes that Daphne's mad at him, mm-hmm. and that, you know, like, he's trapped her, and Daphne's like, I'm trapped you, and, you know, so Daphne's like, well, I mean, you know, he says this speech where it sounds like he's gonna end with, well, and we could have gotten out of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she's...
It was going a different way than she was expecting.
Right, and she's like, starts to tear up because she's like,
you really don't love me. This isn't going to work, is it? Oh no, I've trapped us into a loveless marriage that is not going to work regardless of how hard we try.
It's a loveless marriage and we don't get to have kids. It's like, I don't even have that burr brick out of maybe having some babies, right?
Exactly.
And so she starts...
Because Violet kept talking to her about... Well, at least you'll have your children and you can focus on that. And now she can't.
Right, because there's
she doesn't think she can anyway.
She doesn't think she can. So, like, Simon finally is like, look, what I told the queen
is true. That was being 100% honest. That's how I've seen our journey, and that is, and then he does the famous line, "I burn for you."
Right, and of course she's completely speechless at this point.
She's like, "You burn for me? Like, you do? Okay." These lines are what I wanted to say before we get to that. Mm-hmm. Why do you think I followed you into that garden? And she's like, "Why do you think I went into that garden?" Daphne knew what the fuck she was doing. Mm-hmm. She knew that you were going to follow her into that garden, and she knew they were at least going to have a discussion about their feelings at the very least, and something was going to happen there.
Right.
She was going to, like, she wasn't...
Yeah.
It was a way of getting him out.
Privacy. You know, to get
private.
The real... Yeah.
She needed privacy, and she wasn't going to get that at the ball, so she walked away. I'm going to be a princess! It's like, alright, come with me.
Yeah, come on, baby.
Yeah, come on. And then they have their first time.
Yeah, well, no, she admits that she burns for him.
Yes.
There's, like, really lovely...
It's beautiful.
...kissing, and he's like, I want to show you more. And she's like, wow, okay.
This isn't how you make babies?
And this whole undressing thing is just lovely. I mean, we are going to describe this, so, again, if you have issues...
Yeah, sorry. So they're slowly undressing, and obviously it's old times, so it takes forever.
But she is so surprised by, like, everything. You get the sense that she's never been naked around a guy.
Well,
you know?
That, but also I think she's surprised that Hugh knows how to do it. Because, like, she relies so much on, like, Rose and stuff like that to get her undressed, and she obviously knows how to do it, but, like, she doesn't really do it herself all
it's
that much.
Really,
and
so, not easy to do.
And also she just assumes that, like, guys are clueless on how to do it, and Rose and, like, all the other women are the only ones who know. And then she notices that Hugh knows how every part of her undergarments come off, and she's just like, oh shit.
But oh shit in a good way.
Yeah, so this sex counter goes up to 6.
Hey, but he is enjoying it too. I mean, he's clearly enjoying the whole, you know, pre everything.
Yeah.
And so
he loves the foreplay.
He does. And then it's kind of like, let's face it, porn.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Because you see a lot.
You see a lot. Not everything, but you see a lot.
But part of the conversation that they have is very explicit too.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I love that she talks about, like, I can't do these things.
I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do.
She really doesn't. And, well, first of all, he's shirtless, so that's another counter up. It's number 6 for sex, and number 6 for Simon's shirtless. So those went up.
All the S's.
I wrote down, I like that he's guiding her through it because he knows how inexperienced she is. And he's
That's important later.
Oh, yes, very important because he can have children, but he's not.
Right. Well, we're going to get to that.
That's
a major thing in the next episode.
Well, but it's also,
He
doesn't last as long as one would expect because he does not want to make sure. Babies. He wants to make sure that he doesn't make any babies.
Right.
So he's just like,
but
and again, I'm sorry.
But really enjoying it.
Yes. And I like, and another explicit thing is he was like, show me how you touched yourself.
And she's like,
okay.
Well, first of all, she's like, I can't do that. And then he helps
her.
This is extraordinarily steamy stuff. And it is...
Nice.
Okay.
It's good.
It's good.
And then he ends things before anything can get that steamy. But she doesn't know that, and she's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's like, this
awesome.
Is pretty amazing.
And so that's where the episode ends.
It is.
Quite an interesting episode. Did you want to say something about the books quickly, or what?
I think we've covered, many of the things are very similar. The whole stopping at the end being a surprise and blah, blah, blah. All of that is similar to what you see in the books. The whole Marina storyline, I think there's probably going to be a time later where I might interject more about that. And I know I've said that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But that...
I feel like that's probably best for season 2, to be honest, because there's a moment with Marina in season 2.
Right. And, there will be an appropriate time to talk about Marina as a character, but her character in the books is very, very different from what is shown here, and there's no Colin Marina anything in the books.
I wish that was true here.
right. So that whole subplot, I think some of it is to give Penelope and Colin, some tension, develop their characters a little bit, all that stuff. And I get that. And I think, particularly for Penelope being so protective of him.
Yeah.
So I think that that's lovely. Best part, finally. You had this amazing build up.
Yes.
And it pays off.
It does.
For the most part.
Is that your best part?
That's my best part.
I have two. I have Simon's speech at the appeal because it's just so good and it's so well delivered.
Yeah.
And then him and Daphne's talk at the end.
Yeah.
The
I burn for you.
The I burn for you part. And not just the I burn for you part,
all
of it.
The fact that they're finally talking.
Yeah, they're actually being honest with each other finally.
So they're finally talking, and they're finally touching, and they're finally everything.
I feel like we're both going to have the same worst part.
Marina trapping Colin?
Yeah. Colin proposing to Marina like a dumbass.
Hell the fuck no. This is just wrong.
And I feel so bad for Penelope because, again, when I first watched this, I didn't like Penelope. But now I'm like, oh my gosh.
Poor
I'm
girl.
So sorry.
It's
She's
so
really
awful.
Trying. And again, I see the multiple perspectives for her because she not only doesn't, like, want him to be taken away from her, but she also wants him to have his life. yeah. to have a life where he wants. He
right,
wants
because
to
even as a friend, she cares about him.
Absolutely. And you see both sides of like why she wants him to not be trapped by Marina. And it's nice that you get to see both,
right.
especially when she brings up Greece. I'm like, thank God it's not just an ulterior motive about her. It's about all of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. She cares about him, his whole person.
Yes.
Right. So,
and now we have an overall grade. It's on a letter, American letter grade scale thing.
Right. And my grade for this is an A.
I also give it an A.
Right. It's not quite an A+ because it's just not.
I don't know if anything's going to be an A+ for me, to be honest, just because I'm like...
I really loved that thing with Simon before, so, you know.
Yeah, I think that the highest this season's going to go is an A for me, because I don't think, especially with the episodes we have left, I don't think any of them are going to reach an A+ for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm always going to find some issues, but I'm just picky. So, I mean, obviously that's what
this
podcast is
for. The fact that you're more picky than I am says a lot. I am proud of you.
No, we've had similar, we've had the same grades for everything.
No, not
well, not everything.
But yeah. So cool.
Yeah, that's
cool.
It.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yes.
Our next episode is going to be
Season 1, Episode 6, Swish.
Swish. And we are, fair warning, we have a lot to say about this.
That's going to be a longer episode.
If you need multiple beverages, plan ahead. We are posting what we are having, pictures on Facebook. If you are interested and you want to engage in that part of the conversation,
please feel free.
Right. Tell us what you think and tell us what you think we should be watching, drinking.
Also,
all of those
if
things.
You have any critiques, we will take them. We are critiquing everything, so you might as well.
We're opening ourselves up to that too.
Absolutely.
So there we go. But thanks so much for joining us,
thank
and
you.
We'll be back soon.
Cheers.